But I am the Public Affairs Specialist for Social Security here in Alabama. So what that means is my job is I actually travel all over the state of Alabama and help to educate the public on Social Security benefits. Why do they have a job like mine? Because if some of you are already on Social Security benefits, you know it's a complicated process. And for those of you who have not filed yet, educating yourself on this process will make it easier. So that's what my job is here today, and this morning I was in Huntsville. So I came right back down here. We're based in Trussville. Background on me, I've worked for Social Security almost 10 years. Prior to this position, I took retirement claims, Medicare claims, disability claims. So I'm very technically savvy when it comes to Social Security policy and procedure. And I am going to address Medicare as well. Just to forego you, my expertise is Social Security. Medicare is a sister organization, so I can answer most of those questions for you as well. Like I said, there's a wide age range here that I can already see. Some pre-retirement, some just at retirement age in Medicare, some are veterans. So any information you get, even if you're a veteran, I promise you, you will learn something about your Social Security benefits today. We can go ahead and get started. Just a brief history of Social Security to let you understand the system. Social Security was created in 1935 during the Depression. So what Social Security did for the first time ever, it provided income for older generation without them having to go to work. Prior to Social Security, retirement really wasn't a thing. You pretty much worked until you passed away, or you worked and then your family took care of you. So Social Security gave that opportunity for the first time ever to allow our older generation to stop working yet still have income. What it also did is once the older generation started taking those benefits, the job force was opened up and the younger generation actually worked to help us to get out of that Depression era. A major thing most people do not know about Social Security is actually what we call an income transfer program. And all an income transfer program means is all of us who work, we pay Social Security taxes each time we get a paycheck. You look at a pay stub, it shows your Social Security tax, that's taken out. The money that is taken out of the working employee's paychecks this month, that is actually what is distributed to our beneficiaries who get a check next month. So I may have just bursted your bubble. If you haven't filed yet, there's not a big stack of $100 bills with your name on it waiting for you to file. That's not how it works. It's an income transfer program. Today's workers pay our beneficiaries of next month. And that's the way it always has been since the inception in 1935. This is a picture of when Social Security was signed into law. It was a very different program from how it is today. Originally, Social Security was solely a retirement plan. So there was no spouse's benefits for the stay-at-home wife at the time. There was no disability benefits. There was no children's benefit. If you didn't work, you did not receive a check. Also, you could only get a check at age 65. Now you can file early at 62, or if you become disabled, you can get it earlier than that. The little catch was, though, you could only get that check at age 65. But guess what life expectancy was back in the 30s? 63. Okay, well, what does this mean? That means everybody was working and paying into the system. Very few people lived long enough to draw that Social Security check. So this was a great system for the government, collecting taxes, not really having to pay out much. What they did with that excess money, we actually created what's now the term Social Security Trust Fund. And all the Social Security Trust Fund is, it says excess tax dollars that have been collected that have not yet been paid out. And you may say, hey, Ms. Evans, I've heard it. That does not exist. I've heard it 1,000 times doing these speeches. The Social Security Trust Fund does exist. If you ever question this on our website at socialsecurity.gov, we have an annual trustees report that comes out every single year. It came out this past July. It shows how much income is collected through taxes, how much is paid to our beneficiaries, and what remains in the trust fund. The amount that remains in the trust fund is actually invested in secure government bonds. So on average, it accrues 4% interest every single year. Okay, well, if Social Security has all this money, then why are people afraid that it's going away? How many people in this room have thought that or have heard somebody say, it won't be around much longer? Or for the people who haven't retired yet, it won't be there for me. We've heard that so many times. But if Social Security has all this money, why do people say that? There are two major things going on in our society today that are negatively impacting the future of Social Security. Now, they may sound kind of funny to you, but it really is the truth. The number one thing that's negatively impacting Social Security is most baby boomers did not have enough children. What does that have to do with Social Security, right? Well, remember, Social Security is an income transfer program. And really, it's more of an income transfer program through generations. So we must have a younger generation on the front end of the system working and paying in those taxes. And right now, we don't have enough young people working and paying in to pay all of our beneficiaries that are taking out, and especially the baby boomers who will be taking out over the next 20 years. So that's our number one issue. The second issue is the parents of the baby boomer generation are living longer than ever. Remember on that first slide, I said Social Security, when it was created, life expectancy was 63. Today it's 83. So people now draw Social Security checks for decades, not just a few months and years anymore. And neither of these two things are going to change anytime soon. There's actually a study from MIT that tells us if you and your spouse can make it to age 65, one of you has a 63% chance of living to 90, the other has a 36% chance of living on to 95. So again, people are continuing to live longer and longer lives, therefore take out of Social Security for longer as well. And this is just a chart that shows about 13% of the U.S. population is over 65. But in the next 20 years, when our baby boomers are starting to retire, one out of every five Americans will be over 65 years old. So one out of every five people in this country will be drawing a Social Security check potentially. And this is the U.S. birth rate chart. It's projected from 1920 to 2020. And you can visually see the issues that we're talking about. Here are our baby boomers. Here are their children. So we will only have this many people working and paying in at the same time that all these people are taking out of the system. Something's not right there, right? It's uneven. Now they project that Generation X and Y are pretty much having a one-to-one child ratio. So Social Security will eventually level itself on that. Well, what about our current beneficiaries? Or what about people that are just now starting to enroll, or our baby boomers? How will this big change impact you as a beneficiary? Well, any month that Social Security does not collect enough through payroll taxes to cover all of our promised benefits, we actually have to dip into that Social Security trust fund. Remember I said the trust fund is just excess tax dollars we've already collected. We've had to dip into it varying months of varying years throughout the history of Social Security. Well, beginning back in 2010, we have to dip into that trust fund every single month to pay all of our promised benefits because we don't have enough workers paying in. So what do you think is going to happen if we keep having to dip into our big old trust fund? It's going to go away. It's projected by the year 2033, the Social Security Trust Fund will actually be exhausted. Now, don't let the word exhausted freak you out. That does not mean Social Security is going away. It simply means we will no longer have that income to supplement payroll taxes. So, we will have to pay dollar out for dollar collected. And as we said earlier, there's going to be less people paying in and more people taking out. So, our worst case scenario for our beneficiaries in 2033, in 19 years, is we would have to cut everybody's benefits by about 25% off the top. So if you've been drawing a $1,000 Social Security check for 20 years, it would now be cut to $750. And I know that is horrible and you can't even imagine it, but that is our worst case scenario. And personally, I have confidence that this won't ever happen, purely based on history. If you look at our 79-year history on our website at socialsecurity.gov, one thing you'll recognize is reform after reform after reform, specifically to prevent this type of event from happening. The last time this almost happened was in 1983. In 1983, just 4 months before we were going to have to cut everybody's benefits, Congress said, no, we can't do that, and they rushed and passed Social Security reforms. things that they did in 1983, they actually raised the full retirement age. They also began requiring federal government employees to pay Social Security taxes. Prior to 83, we weren't required to. We also cut some benefits that we pay out. We used to pay children's benefits through college age. Now, it's only high school. So it's the same type of forms that would have to be done on Capitol Hill in order to prevent our worst-case scenario from happening. Will that happen? I don't know. 20 years from now, 19 years from now, who knows what will happen. But what I want you to do is, when what you can walk away from today is know, because of the income transfer program, as long as there are people working and paying in the system, there's always money available to be sent out to our beneficiaries. So some of you already draw your Social Security benefit. Some of you are yet to apply. Some of you may just have applied. What we want to do is kind of encourage you and advise you on how to utilize those benefits in Social Security. You will likely be drawing a Social Security check for decades, not months and years anymore. And I don't know if any of the veterans here have ever told you, but your Social Security check will not make you rich, okay? I know that's very shocking to most of you out there. So adding a Social Security check in Alabama is around $1,050 a month. So $12,500 a year in income. Poverty is around $10,000 a year. So that Social Security check will keep you above the poverty line. Yay! Most of us do want to live far away from that poverty line. So Social Security agrees with most financial advisors. You really should, your dream retirement should be like a three-legged milkstool approach to income. So one would be that Social Security check. Another would be a pension from where you work or a 401k type plan. Another would be personal savings and investments. So if you have all three legs of that retirement stool, you could certainly sit pretty during your retirement years. This is a screenshot of your Social Security statement. We used to mail these out to everybody when they turned 25 and mail them to you every year before your birthday. You may be sitting there thinking, I haven't seen these in a while. Well, these were suspended in 2011. They have resumed for a small group of individuals over 60 years old, or when you hit the milestone birthdays, 35, 40, 45, 50. But any time in between, you've never had access to this information since they've been suspended. But now, if you're computer savvy, you can go to our website at socialsecurity.gov and create a My Social Security account. This will actually allow you to see that paper statement. For those of you who have not filed for benefits yet, you can create a My Social Security account, and you can look at that earnings statement that you used to get in the mail. Shows your estimate at 62, or at your full retirement age, or if you passed away, what your family would get. It also shows every year that you've worked and how much you earned. So it's very good information to plan and prepare for retirement. For all of you that already receive Social Security benefits, it's also a great way to do your business without having to wait in our office or wait over the telephone. There are things that you can do on our website now instead of waiting in our office line. We say if you're not online, you'll be in our line. So things that you can now do on our website, change your address, your telephone number, direct deposit, replacement Medicare card. All of those things can now be done by yourself on our website at socialsecurity.gov. It's very simple to sign up for My Social Security account, but just be aware, it takes about 7 minutes on the computer, but we have deep level of security that you do have to bypass in order to have access to this personal information. So I want to give you a little detail on that because some people are surprised. We ask the general information, Social Security number, name, date of birth, but we also pull some questions from your credit report. Now, we don't run your credit. We're not looking at that. We actually have a contract with Experian, which allows us to pull personalized questions so that if somebody has stolen your purse or they could grab your wallet, they cannot pretend to be you and have your information. So some questions you may see are, which bank is your home mortgage financed with? And it'll list five banks. Or, which vehicle did you finance in 1997? And it'll list five vehicles. So just be aware that those questions will be asked of you, and once you get through the security features, you create that username and password and have access to all of those tools that you can utilize and save you some time in the long run. The most popular question I get is, how are my Social Security benefits calculated? If you've been drawing benefits forever, you might have thought, yeah, where did they come up with that number? If you haven't filed yet, this is going to be very educational for you as well. Believe it or not, it's a fairly simple formula.
Now, I know you say government, nothing simple, and trust me, I understand that. I'm an employee. But when it comes to your Social Security, it is a fairly simple process. We look at your entire body of work, from the very first part-time job you had back in high school to where you're working right now, and we do something called indexing. Indexing simply means we take your money from years past and convert it into modern dollar value. Let me give you an example of indexing. Let's say in 1975, you earned $10,000. Well, $10,000 would actually be below the poverty line today. But when we index $10,000 from 1975, it converts to $49,000 in today's modern dollar day value. So for your 1975 year, we picked out $10,000, plugged in $49,000. We do that to every single year that you worked, because we're trying to find your highest 35 years of wages, the 35 years in which you made the most money. Once we pick out the highest 35 years, we actually add them all up, we're going to get a really big number. We take that really big number and divide by 420. Now, 420 is not some magic number. It's simply how many months there are in a 35-year period. Because that magic number we're trying to find for you is called your average index monthly earnings. An average of how much you made each month over 35 years. Because if we can see how much you made on average each month for 35 years, we can calculate how much Social Security tax you paid in, therefore what you get back out. Now let me reiterate, it is always that 35-year calculation. So what if you only had 25 years of work history when you filed? It is still a 35-year calculation. So that means we would be plugging in 10 years of zeros in addition to your 25 years of wages before we start averaging. Now, I was not a math major at Auburn, but I can sure tell you how a zero will kill an average, okay? That happened to me in a few classes down there on the plane. So if you have lots of zeros, you will have a lower benefit amount. So you can't necessarily compare your benefit to somebody else's that you know. But maybe you worked 40 years of your life, and then you stopped working in your late 50s. You can't even take Social Security for a few years. You're going to get some zeros at the back end of your work history. Those zeros would not hurt you because you already have 35 years in the system for us to choose from. So you see the difference on how a zero would impact your benefit and how it would not. Now don't confuse the 35 years with the 40 quarters of coverage. What 40 quarters of coverage is basically if you work 10 years of your life and you pay in Social Security taxes, you're going to be vested in the government retirement system. Just 10 years of work. But to get your most benefit would be a 35-year calculation. Now, the age in which you file directly impacts how much you receive. The earliest you can draw is age 62, and you receive a permanently reduced rate. Everybody has a full retirement age, and if you don't know yours, I can find it on my very next slide. But if you wait until that full retirement age, you draw 100% of your benefits, no reduction. Beginning back at age 62, for every month that you wait, and you don't take your Social Security, it goes up. It continues to increase every single month, all the way up to age 70. Age 70 is the maximum benefit you can receive based on your age. So let's look at the chart and find our full retirement age. This chart is abbreviated, but it's also on page 9 in your red and blue booklet in your folder for future reference. So if you look here, find your year of birth in this column, and go across and find your full retirement. As you can see, it's staggered based on the year of your birth. Most baby boomers I speak to were born between 1943 and 54. So right now, in 2014, the most popular full retirement age is 66. Does everybody know your full retirement age? Now, I said if you take that full retirement age, you would draw a full benefit. You take it early, it's going to be reduced. What kind of reductions are we referring to? Well, I want to give you an example of a benefit. Let's say someone you know, their full retirement age is 66. Let me back up. This is an example of how a Social Security benefit will grow as long as you don't take it. So the longer you wait, the more it is. Now, like I said earlier, it grows each month if you don't take it. That would have been a really big chart. So I condensed it down to an annual growth chart for you.
Again, the earliest you can file is 62. Let's say, though, that if you have not filed yet, your full retirement age is 66. Let's say at 66, you can draw $1,000 a month. But, you know, if you want to take it at age 62, right when you're eligible, it would actually be a 25% reduction off your full retirement amount. So that is the most extreme reduction you would be looking at if your full retirement age was 66, you want to take it 4 years early right at 62. However, remember, the longer you wait, the more it increases. So in this example, on average, on average, the 66 is a 25% reduction. If your full retirement age was 65 and you took it 3 years early at 62, it was only 20% reduction of benefits. If your full retirement age is 67, you take it 5 years early at 62, it's a 30% reduction of benefits. As I said, at full retirement age, you draw 100%. Each year that you wait, on average, it increases 8%. So if your full retirement age were at 66, and you only went to age 70 and get a maximum benefit, you're looking at a 32% increase of benefit. Now let me break down those numbers I first showed you in the chart. So, is there a way to go backwards? You know what, that's fine, I got this in my head. So let's say the difference between age 62 and 70 in that example, of $750, $1,000, and $1,320 is $570 a month, simply by choosing between 62 and 70. So that is the biggest question that we have at Social Security. How do I determine, do I take it earlier versus later? It's really okay, I'm fine. So what's best for you? How do you take it earlier versus later? I'm okay, we don't have to go back. Thank you though. Well, we've come up with some questions that if you haven't filed for your benefits yet, how you decide earlier versus later. Some of these may sound pretty obvious to you, but it is an individual decision. Yeah. If you took your benefits already, I bet you didn't take it just because your brother or sister or spouse took it at the same time. You look at it as an individual. Why is that? Because everybody has a personal medical history. That is a huge factor when it comes to Social Security. Now, I know accidents happen, or non-hereditary illnesses pop up, things that we have no control over. So you can't really factor those into your Social Security benefits, but you can look at your personal medical history and your family history and kind of see what kind of life expectancy you're looking at. Give my husband Brandon and I, for example. Brandon, 3 out of 4 of his grandparents lived to be over 100 years old.
Whoa.
His remaining grandma, Nana, she works on the farm still. She is 92 years old. Works and lives on her farm in Missouri, Higginsville, Missouri. She is living long, and Brandon's over here thinking, oh, I'm going to live 115, 120 easily, no problem. Me, on the other hand, 3 out of 4 of my grandparents died in their 50s of heart problems, the same heart problems that I've been diagnosed with. So when it comes to Social Security, Brandon and I will likely do completely opposite things. Brandon will most likely wait to age 70 and get that maximum benefit because he believes he will live long enough to make up all those checks he's missed out on since age 62. Me, on the other hand, if I'm still around at 62, I'm taking it and running and enjoying it as long as I can. So that's one thing we always advise people who have not filed yet, really think about that personal medical history. Now, this is a new provision that happened about 3 years ago. We want you to prepare in advance. Obviously, you've always wanted to plan for retirement. But with Social Security, one of our provisions recently changed. You only have 1 year from the time you file to change your mind. You used to could come back 5 years, 10 years, 12 years down the road and say, you know what? I took those benefits at the wrong time. You could pay it back. It would reset your record. You no longer have that extreme option. You only have 1 year from the time you file to change your mind. Also, look at other income coming in. Because if you have a pension from where you work, or you have some inheritance and it's paying your bills just fine, and you want to wait to get that Social Security benefit when it's higher, you can certainly do that. It's just your option. Another thing is, will you still be working? Your work will affect those benefits if you file before that full retirement age.
Now, once you hit that full retirement age, you no longer have an earnings limit. You can make $1 million a month. It's not going to affect your monthly Social Security check. But if you haven't filed yet and you're thinking about it, you need to ask yourself, will I still be working when I turn 62? Sure, I'm eligible to file, but will I be under that earnings limit? This is an annual earnings test. It's basically a cap on how much you can make while you draw that monthly benefit. Just let us know when you file if you're going to be working and how it can affect those benefits. Basically, for every dollar you make over that earnings limit, Social Security will take back 50 cents of your monthly benefit check. So if you're 62 and still working your full-time job, making $30,000 or more a year, there's no reason for you to file with us yet. You'd be so far over that earnings limit, you wouldn't receive a single check, and you'd be permanently locked in at that reduced 62 rate. For those who have not applied yet, the three ways to apply for benefits with us, number one way on our website at socialsecurity.gov. Not like I designed it, but it is a really great website. We got ranked higher than Amazon and Google in consumer friendliness. So basically, if you can Google or you can buy something on Amazon, you can file for your benefits now on our website. Best part about this, do it in the comfort of your own home or office. Don't have to mess with any of us stinking government employees. Trust me, I know not everyone's as pleasant as I am. I have to work with them 8 hours a day. But, you know, a lot of people just are not comfortable with the internet, and I get that. I really do. So we have a national 1-800 number that is available, whether you're draw benefits yet or not. This 1-800 number is available for you. It is on the front cover of your red and blue booklet for future reference. You can call our national 1-800 number Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and be connected with our operator. It is a national program. And when you call the 1-800 number, it's routed to our teleservice centers. So you may be speaking to someone in California or Florida, but again, it's the same national federal program, so they can answer all your questions. When you call to schedule an appointment, though, you can give them your zip code. They would tell you which office you're zoned for based on your home zip code. And then it's your option to go in, have a face-to-face interview, or do it over the telephone. Now, there is a third option for filing for benefits, which is really for all you out there that just have lots of time on your hands and love to people watch. You can just walk into one of our offices and take a number and have a seat, and we will get to you eventually. Eventually being the keyword. Now, our offices really are seeing record number highs. Number one reason, our baby boomer generation. We love you guys, but y'all are killing us right now. Right now, on average, there are 78 million baby boomers out there. This is a new generation of people filing for their benefits with Social Security. On average, there are 70,000 people who turn 62 each week for the next 20 years. 70,000 people turn 62 each week for the next 20 years. Our offices, like I said, have never been so flooded. In downtown Birmingham, we see anywhere from 400 to 550 people every day. We have 6 hours to service that many people and about 21 windows. So it's a fun place to be. If you love the people watching, have spare time, like I said, come and see it. So whether you have filed online, in person, or over the telephone, we're going to ask you some questions. I always like to give people a heads up, because if you've already filed, you may have been taken aback because you didn't know that we were going to ask you this information. So I want to go ahead and address that to everybody who's not filed yet. Number one, we're going to ask you for your Social Security number. We do not need to see that flimsy little paper card we gave you however long ago. We actually hope that you keep it in a place that's very inconvenient to get to. We want it in a safety deposit box, in that firebox, not on your person. If it's in your purse or wallet, we strongly encourage you to take it out. Because again, if your purse or wallet gets stolen, then they would have that number for you. Also, once we get your Social Security number, we're going to ask you personal identifying questions. These are going to be questions that we pull from your Social Security record when you were enumerated the first time, some at birth, some later on. But when you did that, you created an account with Social Security. So we'll ask you personal questions from that, again, to verify your identity. Now, once we verify your identity, we just jump right in and get real nosy. We start asking about marriages and divorces.
Now, the good thing with this is our computer system used to only allow us to input 7 marriages, but now it's unlimited. It used to be a problem. When you file for your benefit, we will ask you, and you're currently married, we will ask you for your spouse's name, birthday, and social security number. If you have an ex-spouse that you are married to for 10 years or longer, we will ask you for their name, birthday, and social security number. If you have a deceased spouse, we will ask you for their name, birthday, and social security number. Now, some people say, I wouldn't know what that social security number is. It's okay. We can usually look it up with name and date of birth. So don't let that information freak you out. We hear all the time, but this is my benefit. Why do you need my husband, my ex-husband, or my deceased spouse's information? This is my benefit. Well, once you file for benefits with us, other people could potentially draw for you as well, or you could potentially draw somebody else. But it's our job to figure that out for you. We go through 2 years of intense training before we're allowed to adjudicate an application. This intense training allows us and teaches us how to go through records to find you the most money possible. People scoff at the term public servant, but at Social Security, we really are. Our job is to find you the most money possible. Now, with that being said, if we find that you can draw more off your ex's record than off your own record, you have to take the most money. I had one lady, she could draw $175 more off her ex-husband's record than on her own. She said, I don't want nothing from that man. I understand that, but if you don't take the most money, you don't get anything. So what do you think she did? She took it, that's right. Some people are concerned, well, if I'm on this other person's record, will they know? It will not affect that person's check whatsoever, and we would never tell them that you're on that record. It's a privacy law issue. So your information is protected whether you file on your record or on somebody else's. Now, if anybody here that's already filed, when you filed with us, you provided that information. You wouldn't have known it, but we instantly went to that person's record while we were talking and smiling to see if you could draw more off them than your own. For a spouse and a currently married spouse that are both living, the most you can draw is only half of that person's check. So if both of you have worked, you are most likely going to draw more on your own record than just half of that other person. Let me give you an example. My husband Brandon, he draws $1,000 a month. Mine, I can draw $750. Technically, I'm entitled to half of Brandon's, but that's only $500. I get $750 on my own, so I take my own. So again, that's something that we instantly do when you're filing for benefits with us. Now, if maybe mine was only $250, we would say, oh, Mr. Evans, your wife is going to be able to draw more off your record. We need to schedule her an appointment. Or if I were in there that day, they could do that right then. So you just provide us with that information, and we will get you the most money possible. Now, with me and Brandon's example, that's while he was alive, and while I was alive, the most you can draw is only half of the other person. Well, let's say Brandon passes away, and I'm so distraught, the first thing I do is run to Social Security to see what I can get. And at that point, that's when I can see, hey, I can draw more off of his record now that he has passed away. Widows and widowers' benefit is a higher percentage of the deceased person's benefit. So if you have a loved one, your spouse passes away, you contact us, we can give you an estimate and see if you could draw more off their record as a widow or widower than you could off your own record. And again, we will get you that most money possible. Once we get through the marriages and divorces, we do ask you if you have a child in the eyes of Social Security, adopted or biological, 18 or younger, 19 if they're still in high school. We also have a provision called disabled adult child. So this could be your son or daughter that's been disabled their whole life. Tell us about those children because they could potentially draw a check off of you as well. In 2012, the United States Treasury no longer prints paper checks for our beneficiaries. So new beneficiaries are required to have either direct deposit for their payment or a direct debit card system, which is a debit card you're issued out and we load your money on it each and every month. If you're ever in the active duty military, we would have asked you for those active duty dates. Why is that important? There's actually certain years that if you're active duty military, you get extra credit for.
I apologize, I do not know them off the top of my head because they are scattered throughout history. But you provide those active duty dates. Possibly you showed us your DD-214, or we have our database with VA, and we verified that. So we have already gotten you those benefits if you are a veteran. If you have not filed yet, make sure to bring that DD-214 with you, or again, just provide us with those dates and we can cross-reference them for you. Railroad Board actually has their own retirement system, so if you or your spouse ever worked for the railroad for 5 years or longer, tell us about that, because Railroad Board, like I said, can take over jurisdiction of our Social Security plan. We're gonna ask about work. Obviously, we talked about how work can affect those benefits earlier. So just give us an estimate of how much you think you're gonna work and earn while you pile these benefits. There's one thing we don't talk about, and many of you veterans may be familiar with this, taxes. Your Social Security benefits may be taxable depending on the other income you have during retirement. So just be aware that you may have to pay taxes on part of your Social Security benefits depending on the other income you have during retirement. What Social Security does offer, if you have to pay every year due to your Social Security benefit and your other income, if you meet those income thresholds that require you to pay taxes, Social Security actually has a voluntary tax withholding. That means that we can withhold taxes from your check each month before you get it, again, to prevent you having to pay when you file tax time. There's only certain percentages we're allowed to withhold, though. It's 7, 10, 15, or 25%. And you can elect to have us do that before you ever get your first check. Or if you want to wait the first year, see how you file at tax time, there's no statute of limitation on this. Any questions on retirement benefits? I'll move on along to general Medicare information. Okay, Mark did touch on a few things with Medicare, and like I said, the nitty gritty of Medicare is not in my brain. I know the basics of Medicare and can probably answer most of your questions when it comes to Medicare and enrollment, because that's exactly what Social Security does for us. Social Security, to be eligible for Medicare, obviously 65 years or older, or if you've been on our disability program for 24 months, or if you have certain chronic illnesses, you actually don't have to wait that 2 years. Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, kidney failure, if you're an end-stage renal disease and dialysis, those type of things make you Medicare eligible. Now there are three basic parts to Medicare and our enrollment period for those three basic parts. Enrollment periods, your initial enrollment period. This is 3 months prior to your 65th birthday to 3 months after your 65th birthday. That's our initial enrollment period. We also have something called a special enrollment period. Let's say you turn 65, you're still working, and you have insurance with your employer. You can defer the parts of Medicare that you have to pay for until you stop working. So once you see yourself stopping work, you would simply contact Social Security. We get you two forms. One form that your HR department verifies you were covered with that insurance. And another is to choose which month you want your Medicare to start. That is a special enrollment period, and you would have no penalties if you were covered under insurance based on that current employment. Then there's the general enrollment period. This is for individuals. Unfortunately, we've seen a lot of changes in insurance coverages in the past few years, and some of it has not been in a good way. So we've had a lot of people at 65, they're like, no, I don't need Medicare, I have this good coverage. I go to the VA, they cover this, that, and the other. Well, 2 years later, they're not necessarily covering everything that they used to cover. So they contact us. If they're not in their initial enrollment period and they're not in a special enrollment period, they can only file during our general enrollment period. Now, this is different from the enrollment period that Mark referred to. This is the general enrollment period for Medicare, A, B. So what that means is January 1 to March. January through March each year is our Medicare general enrollment period. As he said, the supplement and prescription is November 15th. Let's talk about those three basic parts of Medicare. Medicare Part A is our free hospital insurance. We say free because when you have Medicare Part A, there's no monthly premium. You actually pay a Medicare tax. If you look on your pay stub, you pay Social Security tax, you pay Medicare tax. So you pay for your Medicare Part A when you're a worker. So when you're retired and you have this coverage, there's no monthly premium. Medicare Part A, again, is for hospital insurance. And as that shows, the 2014 deductible is $1,216 for Medicare A hospital. Now, again, like Mark said, we don't know the new numbers until after October, so I don't have the 2014 numbers for you yet. We have Medicare Part B as in boy. This is what you would use when you go to the doctor or have outpatient services. The premium for 2014 is $104.90 a month. Again, Part B covers about 80% of your doctor bills and outpatient services, and has a premium of $104.90. Now, there was a law passed a couple of years back that's called the income-related Medicare adjustment. So if you and your household have a higher income level, you will pay a little bit more than this $104.90, depending on what that income level is for an individual. We have Medicare Part D. I'm going to skip Part C for now. Medicare Part D, the prescription drug coverage. We had a question earlier, I think it was at this table, about how to choose the right plan for Medicare Part D. And as Mark lightly covered, there are lots of plans out there. And each plan is going to be probably different for every single person in this room. And why is that? Because nobody takes the same medication. So you need to choose your prescription drug plan based on your medications that you take. It's overwhelming, but there are some services out there through the senior health program that we have here in Alabama. This may be a good number for anybody to jot down. 1-800-AGE-LINE. 1-800-AGE-LINE. AGE-LINE. What this does, these are actually counselors with the state of Alabama that can help you navigate the maze, as this whole program is taught. At Social Security, I can't say, oh yeah, this great, this one's great, that one's great, because I don't know what your prescriptions are. But if you were to do it either through a counselor or through Medicare directly, we are going to need to know your medications that you take. If you're computer savvy, you can actually go to Medicare's website, you type in all your prescriptions that you take, you put in your zip code, and you hit enter. And it populates all of the drug coverages out there that cover your medications. So then it's your choice to decide, well, I'll go take this plan because it's lower premiums but a higher deductible. You just basically compare. And then you can enroll either right there on the website. If you want to call Medicare, it's 1-800-MEDICARE. And what they do is they do the exact same thing. You give them your medications, they type them in, and they tell you which prescription drug coverage is best for you. Again, you want that plan that covers all your prescriptions. What if your prescriptions change though? As Mark had addressed earlier, when you enroll in a prescription drug plan that at that time seems to be the best for you, you're going to get the formulary. This is a list of medication that your plan covers. We encourage you to make a few copies of this list, keep it in your purse or wallet, so when you go to the doctor and he says, okay, we need to get you on some new medicine, some high blood pressure, something else, you say, choose one that's on this list. And if he feels that the best one for you is on that list, it's a win-win. And if he prescribes you one that's not, then that's going to be an out-of-pocket expense for you. So you really want that medication that covers all your prescription coverage. Either Medicare directly can help you with that, or the 1-800-AGE-LINE, they can advise you to do that as well. What the Medicare Part C Advantage plans are, those are basically outstationed drug companies that manage your whole Medicare. So that's really kind of a homework thing for you, but those are the Advantage plans that Medicare approves them to manage your Medicare costs for you, and they all have different advantages. Some of them don't have premiums, some of them do. But all that can be found on Medicare.gov. And again, this is the 1-800-MEDICARE number. It's Medicare 633-4227. So that's what it spells out.